Well, hello. It's time for another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Oh, boy. Couple things. So many things. No things at all. I don't know. Okay, first of all, I have to report something. I don't know why I'm screaming at you. I'm so sorry. I'd like to come to you with calmer tones, normally. I have sort of publicly made fun of this place, Chili John's, nearby where we record the studio, because it's this dirty white building that just has in cursive letters, Chili John's, and all these like phrases like, come in and eat while it's hot. And it just looks insane. And I've mentioned it before and we kind of laughed about it. And then somebody else came on the show. I think Steve Agee came on the show and said, I've actually eaten there and it's amazing. I ate there and it is incredible. If you want really good chili, beef, chicken. I promise you, they're not paying me to say this. It's so good. And they have homemade cold lemon pie that's like truly homemade. It's the best pie. So, and it's in Burbank. So if you're in Burbank, don't be deterred by the dirty white building, because you will go in and it's an old diner and it's like the, you know, you walk in and it's like out of time. And I had like, you put like vinegar and sour cream and all kinds of peppers in your chili, and you can get chicken or beef or veggie chili. And when I was in there, a homeless guy came in and they gave him a bowl of chili for free because they just are human beings. And they're like, here, you take it. And the homeless guy was trying to pay with a handful of coins and was like, please let me pay. And so they finally let him pay a little bit. But I thought that was just so amazing that they were just like, here, eat. We're, you know, it was very human. And then I think it was also very human to let him pay a little bit and to say, yes, you can, we can have that transaction. And, you know, so anyway, across the board, I can't recommend Chili John's enough. Do it. Go in, eat while it's hot. 30 years ago, that's how math works. 30 years ago, I saw my very first R-rated movie in the theater. I was 10 years old, and that movie was A Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 3, Dream Warriors. I can't believe it came out 30 years ago, around this time. I want to say this week or last week or very recently. That movie's 30 years old. I was obsessed with Freddy Krueger as a kid. I talk about him a lot. He was my favorite freak. He was maybe my first crush. I thought Freddy was terrifying and sexy and hilarious and everything all rolled up in one. I loved the first Nightmare on Elm Street film. I think to this day it's one of the best horror films ever made. Part 2 is the gayest movie you'll ever see, gayer than anything at Outfest this year. Check out Part 2. It's not very good. The problem with Part 2 is that they had no idea what the franchise was. I was such a nerd, and I've always said I'm more of a nerd than I am gay. So as much as it has a lot of very overt with a gay leather daddy coach and with the scream queen being a boy who later became openly gay out actor Mark Patton. And there's so much to be said and lots of people have written about how gay part two is. I love Part 3 because Part 3, aside from it being my first R-rated movie and that feeling like this is such a rite of passage, Part 3 really understood what Freddy Krueger was and who he was and what the franchise was going to be. And they'd had some time. It was 3 years after the original came out. It also starred Patricia Arquette in her first role, and I was fascinated by her. She plays a character named Kristen, and she's later played by, in Part 4, that role is played by a girl named Tuesday Knight. That's her name, Tuesday Knight with a K. But I remember the opening credits where Patricia Arquette is dumping raw coffee into her Diet Coke. She takes a spoonful of raw coffee grounds and swills it down with a Diet Coke. And I was just in it. I was like, this is the best movie ever. What's going to happen? It was genuinely terrifying. There's a moment early in the movie where she goes to the house and there's a pig sitting on a plate with an apple in its mouth and it growls at her. And I was like, I have never been more scared in my life. She had a really horrible, cokey 80s mom that always threw the dinner parties and who was always just like going, Kristen, and so mad at her. And it was about these kids who all had to go to this dream center, and they all had these dreams about Freddie, but they were all troubled kids. And I mean, Jennifer Rubin played this character. Of course, I know her. It's Jennifer Rubin. And she was also in a great movie called Bad Dreams that I love, about a cult. She's the one girl that escaped a cult. If you haven't seen Bad Dreams, it's also from late 80s. It's a great movie. But Jennifer Rubin played a girl named Taryn, and she was addicted to heroin. And I remember seeing heroin for the first time, and it's and Freddy Krueger, instead of knives, he had heroin needles. That's how he killed her. Spoiler alert. And she had these suckers in her arm that were like little mouths, and they were sucking for the heroin. But I guess to make it like more fun and cool and not make it to be real heroin, the heroin was blue. It was like Windex. So when I was a kid, I thought heroin was blue because of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors. And I remember when police officers came to our school. Why would they do that? Why would police officers come to school, elementary schools, with a suitcase full of drugs to show you what drugs look like? And all it did was make me want everything in that suitcase. I was like, oh, I want to try that, and I want that. And they had heroin in a suitcase. And I was like, that's not heroin. It's not blue. And I got into it with a police officer. And I was right. And I still think I'm right to this day, because the heroin that went into Jennifer Rubin's arms looked like Windex. There was also this girl named character named Jennifer, and she was like addicted to TV, and she put cigarettes out in her arm just to like stay awake because she didn't want to be visited by Freddy. And I watched this like, oh yeah, that's what you do to stay awake. Put a cigarette out in your arm, or, you know, because coffee and Diet Coke is no longer any good. And Jennifer is watching Dick Cavett and Zsa Zsa Gabor, who are listed in the opening credits of this movie. I love the 80s so much that in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, they're going to be like, featuring Dick Cavett and Zsa Zsa Gabor. Like, they're going to give them credit in the movie. She's watching them on TV, and then, of course, falls asleep. Cigarettes aren't even enough to keep her awake. And Freddy comes out of the TV and, of course, grabs her and screams, "Welcome to primetime, bitch," and throws her head into the TV. And that's how she dies. And they assume it was suicide, that she jumped up high. The TV's hanging suspended from the ceiling, and she jumps up and threw her head into the television. There was also this kid named Joey, and he was in a wheelchair, and he was so hot. And I was always like way into Joey, and he makes it into part four. Not long into part four, but he does make it into part four, as does the black guy who was hothead, and his name was Kincaid. I love the white kids are like, Joey, Jennifer, Taryn, and then they have to name the black guy Kincaid. You know, but he was like really funny and great, and he also makes it into part four. There was also the nun who you find out later is Amanda Krueger, who's Freddy's mother, and she's topless in one scene, and she talks about getting gang raped into becoming Freddy. I watched all of this in the theater when I was 10, and I was like, yeah, this is the truth. This is everything I need. Heather Langenkamp, of course, who was Nancy in the original part one, comes back in part three, and as does John Saxon, who played her dad, and he's an alcoholic. All of this is happening in this movie. It is the greatest movie ever. So if you haven't seen Dream Warriors, and I haven't spoiled the whole thing for you, check it out and get ready for Freddy. Hi, guys.
Hey, man.
Hello.
How are you?
Great now.
I'm sitting here with my friends Matt Bronger and Leslie Ann Huff.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
We are in a very special setup today because the studio is banging here at Feral, and there's just things happening all the time. I know, what am I doing? Why am I saying it like that? Like,
don't doubt yourself.
The studio is wild and crazy, but there's something happening in studio. So we're sitting in this amazing, like, gentleman's lounge.
Yeah. I feel like we should be smoking cigars.
I know. It's like we're on these like leather chairs, and there's a full bar behind us. It's 11 a.m. So we'll get started that soon.
Shortly.
And then there's a cooler with Red Bulls and water and all that stuff. There's a stand with pop chips and pretzels. Do you guys see that over there?
This is all
in front of us. I'm not making these things up, you guys. And then, because the movie Anomalisa. Did you guys know this? The movie Anomalisa was recorded here, filmed here, whatever you call it, the Charlie Kaufman. So there are a bunch of these. And it was one of my favorite movies.
Little dioramas.
Yeah, it's devastating.
Oh my God, it's devastating. Yeah. It was. I saw that movie. I was like, that's me on many levels.
Shut up.
No, I went real deep with it. I got real deep with it. And I don't like cartoons, but I love that movie. And they're the real life models that were in that movie are sitting around us.
Wow.
The characters from Anomalisa and these like, and, you know, and the
one of the sets, one of the elevator. Sets,
yeah. It's everywhere around us. Isn't that great? And
now I have to go see the movie.
The most important thing. Oh, it's wonderful. It's great. Did you like, I mean, it's, you know, Charlie Kaufman. So it's
right.
All
so
of his
gonna
stuff.
It's going to be great.
It's wonderful. It's so funny and dark and beautiful. And oh boy, the ending packs.
Yeah.
Don't say
well, to do like a stop motion film and to just make it about loneliness.
Right. I know. And make it about
people. It's
kind
people. Of genius.
I mean, it was so, I was like, I was really, and you couldn't tell that story with real people.
Mm-mm.
The way they told that story.
Yeah.
So that's the other genius
really
about that
point.
Movie is that you have to see it in this way. Mm. And it's really, really great. But the most interesting thing I think about what we're doing is we're holding
these microphones
that are,
they look like cherry ice cream cones.
Yeah.
They do.
Like a big scoop.
They're delicious looking.
Mm-hmm.
They're very 80s. You were saying earlier, Matt.
Like we're introducing acts on Solid Gold.
Right,
solid
right, exactly.
Gold. Or like putting on the hits.
There were so many of those shows, like growing up, it was like, and it was always like these way too perky guests. Mm-hmm. That would say things like, things are banging over at Farrell. They would
That's
say
why
things
it was
like,
joyful when you said that.
And, but it's also like Mr. Microphone. Did you guys have Mr. Microphone?
I did not.
I know what you mean now. I thought that was like a toy, but, I mean, a show, but it's a toy, right?
It's a toy.
It's just a microphone.
Yes.
Oh, and
it
then it's
cool.
Hooked up to a little,
it was, yes.
Like radio type
yes,
thing, and
exactly.
You could walk around announcing things.
Yes, and
yes.
You could go, and you could, it was before karaoke, and mm-hmm. You would plug it in, and then you could like sing along to songs holding a microphone very much like this.
But did yes. It come with karaoke tapes, like, sans the words, or you had to sing along to just the
I don't
songs.
Remember.
I don't think so. I think it was a real lame product.
I think it was just
just like having a microphone
put
that
in
you
your
could
favorite
buy in
tapes,
a store.
Buy your own tapes, put them in, and pretend to sing with them. It doesn't make noise.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
You could do it with a regular radio, but why?
But why? Have some more cocaine. It's the 80s. Just pretend you're a star. You've got it. You win.
Do you do that, though, where you watch stuff
do
like
do cocaine
80s?
And pretend I'm a star?
Do you do that
every
stuff?
Day.
Do you
always.
Guys chopping lines? This is, I mean, this table is amazing.
This table is a great Coke table.
CD case. Not that I've done it. No, do you watch like media from the 80s, like movies and TV shows, and go, oh, that's a cocaine idea? That's
oh,
how that got
oh,
made.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I haven't done enough cocaine to know.
Well, but,
did you see the halo on
I was going to say, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, Judge Leslie Ann walked in the chambers. No, but there's
I've just
so
read
many
a lot
things.
Yeah.
Sure, a lot of research.
Just read things.
Internet research.
There were so many things. Well, first of all, like friends of mine who were like to have talked about like being in the industry in the 80s was that it was just so open. Mm-hmm. I have a friend that was in one of the Friday the 13th movies in the 80s. And he said they would shoot all hours of the night and they would get tired. And so like, I'm really tired. They go, we'll do a bump. And they would just hand them cocaine.
Whoa.
And it was just kind of what you did.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
It was just so standard that it wasn't even behind closed doors. It was just like, oh, that's just what we did. And we knew it was bad, but whatever. Keep going. It's Hollywood. And,
yeah.
You know. And, but there, you know, I definitely think of movies like The Apple. Have you ever seen the movie
Oh,
The Apple?
Yes. That was just bags of cocaine.
That's
yeah.
Got to be
where
a cocaine idea.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen The Apple, after you see Anomalisa and feel really bad or lonely, watch The Apple.
It
and
will make
feel
you feel so good about
so
yourself.
So good. So connected. It's a musical. Do you know it, Matt?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. And it's set in 1994, but it came out in 1980. And mm-hmm. The future of 1994 is just glorious.
Well, accurate.
If only.
It's exactly what it turned out to be like.
I think,
yes.
Didn't Orion Studios make that?
I think you're right. Yeah,
because they were
Golan
the ones.
Globus and all
they
this.
They put out all the muscle and bullet movies from like Rambo 2 on that are full on. You know, I would say, I would arguably, Apple would be like your gay male or straight female cocaine.
Yes.
I think Rambo 2 and on would be your
straight male cocaine.
Where you
absolutely.
Just are killing people.
This is how I feel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Crush my enemies, you know, just very. Yeah.
And I, as a kid, loved all of those Rambo, Commando.
You love Commando.
What was the one, there was the karate movies, not, you know, obviously Karate Kid, of course, but that wasn't the same kind of movie at all. But the What were the movies that
we got? Like, you got Bloodsport,
Bloodsport,
like Jean-Claude Van Damme, Jean-Claude. Kickboxer.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's the same thing. That kind of nihilistic, like this irredeemable group of villains.
Oh my
they
god,
they deserve a kick to the face.
Oh, it's just and they're all terrible. You know, I remember there were some movies just called Ninja, right? Like Ninja.
There were like a lot of ninja movies. Okay. There's American Ninja.
Okay. I remember one called Ninja 3 that I really liked in the 80s, and I don't remember why I liked
that,
Ninja 3.
I think 3. Was Spider-Man 2, and it was had a British actor with a mustache. That had like a dubbed voice or something.
Oh, wow. Yes, please.
Yes. Maybe it might have been Swedish. So I just saw a documentary about it. That was like, oh, that's why that movie was so weird.
Yes.
It was the dubbing.
Yeah, that's why the white guy who was dubbed, you know.
Wow.
It's like typically you see Asian actors doing martial arts and then they turn around and
Do
the,
you know.
What are you doing in my room? Like
this,
you know, very European or American type voice. Kind of
I remember years ago, one of my early jobs, I've had so many weirdo jobs in this town, but a bunch of Groundlings people were hired to go in for Roger Corman and over voices on we did like a Lady Beastmaster movie, and then we did another one called The Keeper of Time, and it was just one of these like really bad like Lord of the Rings wannabe movies, but it was European actors who learned English phonetically, so it didn't sound at all right, and we had to match voices to their voices.
And they got all Groundlings people to,
they got Groundlings
to turn into
people
a comedy.
And they got and they were like, because they got us all for like I don't know, we got like $80 for like 7 weeks of work or something terrible.
That adds up.
And you know what I mean? It's great. Yeah. It was worth it. It was an opportunity. And but we all, there were like seven of us, and we did every voice in the entire movie.
Oh, that must have been fun.
It was so much fun. And then I'm sure if you watch the movie now, you're like, isn't that the same? Like unintentionally. But yeah. I remember we'd have to do like, they would learn, they would be like, we have prepared a bath for you. And you had to be like, we have prepared a bath for you.
Yeah, like, you had to keep match the same tempo.
Like same tempo.
Well, you're playing the character that has a couple thoughts in his head at the same time. And you're just like, I have to pick up Sonia at 9.
Exactly.
And I have to, you know, I have to order the pizza for my
exactly,
kid. And
exactly,
you're like, and there's also, you know, like when you're in the middle of a sentence and you get
and
distracted.
And I have to be like, well, when you're a timekeeper or the keeper of time. You really have a lot on your mind.
Lots going on. The wheels are always
the
turning.
The keeper of time, which is
the
just
wheels
a watch
of the clock.
It's just a watch.
That's all a keeper of time is.
We all are. Yeah. We wear watches, and we are now keepers of time.
But I would love to find those movies now and be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I don't even remember who all did it with me, but it was like one of those things that we were, and we got really, we took it really seriously. Like,
sure.
Who, you know, as you do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Private rehearsal
sessions. Oh, yes. Lots of trust falls. And
you hired a coach. $100 an hour.
I'm sure blew our whole
you
watch.
You spent $20 to do this job.
You paid to do it, yeah.
I feel like so many things, you know, I did pay to do. Like, ultimately, like, you know, like, and I remember being like, it was such a great opportunity.
Yes, lots of exposure. Because you never know.
Yeah.
That's what my parents always tell me. Well, you never know.
Yeah.
You never know who will see you. You never know who will be there in the audience.
Uh-huh.
You just never know
just
what
never
opportunities
know.
Lie around the corner.
Yeah.
Like, will you ever understand
it's
how
like
this
buying
works?
A lottery ticket. You don't. Ever, you do have a chance, but
and,
it's like one in a trillion.
And I love that. Like, and obviously that there's part of that reality that has to be why we got into this.
Sure.
Is that we're just like, we love the fantasy of like, you know, we love the stories of like someone was discovered and that's the thing.
Right.
But really, like, we never know, sure, but we do know that like hard work and just people and doing the job is what gets you the job.
Sure, and
like,
that fantasy of somebody being in the audience and then calling you up the next day and going, you're a star, please be in my films. And
join Hollywood, sign here.
And
it's almost like I've kind of come to the point where like, would you want that? Would you want that rocket to the moon where all of a sudden you're thrust in the public eye, where literally everyone that sees you on this magazine cover is like, who the F is this?
I know.
I hate them.
I know.
I hate them because they haven't been vetted by me, you know, because that's how the public
is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's kind of like, I don't know
if
that would be
ready
worth
for
it.
It's the sad thing for the people who get thrust in that way. I mean, I go back to that poor Susan Boyle woman, woman from the small village, in Scotland.
Yeah.
I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And like, she's this incredible voice when she sang I Dreamed a Dream on that talent show. And, you know, we like lifted her up, and then it was like next thing you know, she'd had like plastic surgery, and she's on a red carpet,
weird and, makeup, and yeah. just a and, sad
and just
smile,
dead inside. Yeah, and like, no, like she wasn't.
Yeah,
you know, she has talent. This business immediately ruined her because she hasn't.
And she didn't know what to do.
Why she got enormous was plainly kind of disgusting. Like Doug Stanhope had the best line about it, or he has a joke called "Have you seen it?" And he's talking about like some circus freak thing or some amazing or some, you know, even like discovering a buried angel kind of in the ground. He's just like, the ugly woman that could sing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it
that's
was.
That's all it is.
And she's not ugly,
are.
But that, you got to say that for the joke. But it's like, yes, she was not as attractive right. as the women and men we have that sing,
right.
generally speaking, and that are stars. And that's why everyone loved her. And it's just like,
I know. It
you
is. It is.
A-holes,
it is disgusting.
Know?
And it is like pornographic in a way that, like, when you're like, you know, there was somebody just posted a video of some woman without arms going on another show and singing and playing piano with her feet. And it was a beautiful song, but it's like, you know, let's listen to the audio of this and enjoy the person's talent without like trotting out their disability and saying, and on top of it all, you know, it's like,
right.
We've gotten to a point where we're like, we need this on top of this, on top of this.
Yeah.
And it is just a freak show. It is mm-hmm. no well, different from going to Barnum and Bailey and just yeah. being like, look at the unicorn.
Not to extrapolate something that like way too far, but it's almost like how when someone you love dies, you're crying for yourself.
Oh,
because
yeah.
you're going to miss them.
Sure.
Just like when you see someone like that, when you go, wow. You feel good about yourself.
Oh, of course.
Like, I
not
just,
me.
You know, I am cool with you. That's perfect.
It's all
that's
about their talent.
That's a perfect yes. Because someone listening to this right
know.
Now is saying that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Feeling good about themselves.
No, with no self-awareness.
Oh, that's the whole thing. That's never ending yeah. when we get yeah. into that thing. No. And I love that.
Cycle.
It's like, but you're right. You're totally right.
I had the biggest LOL ever where I was kind of like writing about for, you know, Women's Appreciation Day, why don't you give to Planned Parenthood or whatever. And if you're a guy, maybe think about being less of a shitbag. I'm less of a shitbag than I was, kind of thing. check in and make sure you're not a shitbag. And a 24-year-old dude, it's perfect, retweeted and wrote, I don't have to ask myself that. Like, of course
wow.
you don't.
Oh, like, no, you
LOL,
don't.
24-year-old dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you do.
24 yeah, years
you
of experience
like,
being
you don't
a
even know.
At that age, you're like, if you're even to question.
I treat chicks real good, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Real
yeah.
good,
greatest
dude.
One thing when you're just like, you know, I love it. I love
it's so
it
good.
So
sorry,
much.
I feel like I've...
No, it's
no.
wonderful.
Spoke too much.
I love all of this. It's really great. But we all, and it's like, I have to check myself in times that I really want to say something really, you know, profound about racism around my friends of color. You know, and I'm like, Drew, you're being disgusting. You're right. You're basically like, and get out right now. You know what I mean? Like, you're basically yeah. going, stop it. Like, stop being such yeah. a, like, I'm a white with open mind.
I'm very aware.
Very aware. And yeah. I'm very evolved. And I'm a very good person.
Let
and
me show you how cool I am.
Yeah,
I feel
exactly.
better about me.
I know.
About myself. Mm-hmm.
I know.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So anyway.
Well, speaking of freak shows, I recently realized or found out they still have one in Venice Beach. Do you guys,
what?
Have you been there?
They do?
Yes. It is. So first of all, I went there this past weekend and it was like being in the post-apocalyptic film because it was, I haven't.
You mean Venice Beach itself?
Venice
sure.
Beach,
on
yes.
the boardwalk?
Yeah. Yes. And I'm realize how I sound right now because I'm just like, oh my goodness, it was so terrible. But we went on it was sunny here, like uh-huh. in, you know, mainland. And when some days when you go to the beach, it's like, completely cloud
almost
covered.
Always
so,
I lived
yeah.
in Santa Monica for a year. The first year I lived here, I lived in Santa Monica and I was like, I live by the beach. It was gray the entire
all the time.
Yeah, I lived
and
in
it
Venice
surprises
my first year.
Me oh okay so you guys yeah. know and mm-hmm. it surprises me every time I'm mm-hmm. like, what a wonderful day to go to the beach. Anyway, so it already had that like cloudy vibe mm-hmm. and then we're walking down the beach and you know how it is down there, like it's a free-for-all, which is fabulous.
It's Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet
precisely yes yes all of it. So I'm basking in all this craziness and then you hear this man on a microphone going like, step right up. I mean pretty much
wow.
step right up, shows about to begin everybody, and come see the two-headed turtle. And my husband and I look over and there's literally a bearded woman
oh wow
just sitting outside checking her phone, a man, you know, I'm not sure what this is, but when people have like literally hair all over their face and okay. all over them, well, yeah, I'm not I, sure I forget what the that word, is.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes,
there's
yes.
a guy there just standing, taking tickets, you know. It was like, what is this? And it was a huge building with like murals painted on it of all of the quote unquote freaks that you could go in and see. And
wow.
it was like, this is still a thing.
That is
my
so...
sweet husband was profoundly saddened by it.
Yeah.
He's like, look at her. Look, you know, the bearded woman sitting there texting. He's like, look at her. Yeah. What's her life? What is this? And it was just so strange. That, like, it's 2017 and that's still a thing.
That we're just, you know, oddities, like yeah. human oddities.
Yeah.
And
I think, I mean, there. I think it's pretty much on brand for Venice Beach, you know, yeah. but yeah. like, yeah, that is.
Well, and, you know,
although maybe not. I kept thinking, like, I thought Venice Beach, you know, there's like hippies here and like people who, you know, free love everywhere and come down and you know, sell your wares or play your music
oh,
and
you
do whatever
from the
you want.
Of, like judgment.
People that live there.
Right.
That,
yeah.
know. But there's also like for the tourists to go down, they know to see the freaks at Venice Beach. They know that
right.
like the tattooed people will be there.
Yeah, they want a one stop shop.
Shaved heads. And, and it is a really strange thing. I had something
so
last weekend. And it was a very odd experience for me because we were shooting a comedy video. Like we were shooting like a pilot. It was a proof of concept, which you guys know what that is. But for people, it's like when someone has an idea and they like instead of when they're trying to pitch the idea for a TV show, sometimes they need to like show it and be like,
sure.
OK, let's see what it looks like. So we were just shooting this thing and I was playing this like genderqueer character that was in a pink wig, kind of like our microphones that we're holding, with like lip gloss on, but I was in a dress, but I was a man. It was just sort of like I didn't want to identify male or female,
mm-hmm.
and but that wasn't the joke of the character I was playing. I was just playing this nightmare garbage person who was really mean to everybody, and we were just shooting these things, but I was walking around in like this, like in public, and. The amount of people that would come up and were trying to sneak pictures of me. And I immediately turned into this. And I'm like, I'm playing a crazy character to me. I get to take this wig off and this isn't
right.
how I live. This isn't my truth. However, there are people in this world
yes.
who live like this. And there are people who will just
are
be like, let's take a picture.
Oh,
and they were
God,
doing, and I snapped
can't.
And snapped at this one lady. And I hate that she was the last one to deal with it. And I said, are you at the fucking zoo? I said, what are you doing?
That.
I was like, and she started babbling like, I'm in a photography class right now and all this stuff.
And they taught
like,
me to take it over my shoulder and pretend like I'm trying to shoot my face.
Exactly.
It's a new technique. It's called the anti-selfie.
So
it's right to the left
class,
of your face.
You know, just bigotry and showing what freaks look like. And I felt so like, you know, humiliated. And this one, another lady came up and said, I'm sorry, you look fabulous. Can I get a picture with you? And I said, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Because you treated me like a human being.
Sure.
You know, and it's crazy to be like I said, it's not my reality. It's not what
yeah.
I, you know, but I did have a moment of, and what the greatest thing about, you know, that does sound really gross and it sound like, you know, but about doing what we do is it does teach you empathy,
sure.
you know, and it
yeah,
does teach you to be
someone else's shoes.
I'm literally wearing someone else's shoes and I'm going, I'm walking out in public and I was like, what if that is like, you know, oh, and I went and changed in the men's room and there was a group of people standing by the elevator and they were dying to get a picture of me in a dress walking into the men's room because I thought that would be so funny. And I was like, this is literally a problem that we're dealing with in our country.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm doing a you know, silly, glorious, whatever comedy yeah. video. With that's not our joke. It's not the joke that we're making.
And it's no. funny you bring up like you know what we do and all this stuff. But pretty much everyone I know, including myself, we had to learn like let's not take pictures of people we
mm-hmm.
don't know and post and make fun of them.
Right.
I don't do that.
Exactly.
You know. And mm-hmm. for a while I kind of did. And I'm like, this is screwed up. What am
yeah.
I doing? I'm
right.
I'm literally doing point at the freak. Let's
right.
laugh
yeah.
at the freak.
Right.
So you know, even if someone is doing something they shouldn't be doing. That's where my thing would be. It would not be making fun of someone for how
right.
they looked, of course.
Well, yeah,
whatever.
If you saw someone
but
like being an asshole
time,
or committing a crime or whatever, and
right.
you're like, I'm going to show you being a complete garbage person,
yeah.
then sure.
That's fair.
But
that's
but
fair.
Not like,
but
you know,
think,
look
but,
how this person's trying to exist.
But those people who are not, you know, doing what we do and are there just to look, which is fine.
Yeah.
They're completely fine. Let's take a picture of this person and put on Facebook and my whole family's going to laugh.
Right.
Because it's fine to laugh.
Right.
It's okay. Like, you know, yeah. The best part of American Idol is when the people can't sing and they cry.
Yep.
I love it.
We love those first couple of weeks.
Bring on
of bad
the Hunger
auditions.
Games.
Let's watch the worst. It's the Hunger Games.
It
is. It's true. And it's like this thing where we, you know, it's the bully that we are as a country and as a society of just like, let's punch down. And we all can collectively laugh. Like, we all, you know, are garbage bags, but we're not that weird. Yeah. We're not that,
right.
You know,
messed
up.
It makes you feel good about yourself.
I know.
Like you're saying.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we feel great about ourselves.
We really solved all the problems.
We really did.
So woke.
Yeah.
I want to hear
DC.
Oh, what did you say?
Send this recording to DC.
Exactly.
Let them know.
This is a direct line.
Oh,
this
good.
Room. Yeah,
oh,
this is
okay.
A situation room. We're going great. Right into the White House because
yeah.
they really care what we
Hello,
think.
Hello, Donald.
Today. Hello.
What's up, Bannon?
Hi, Kellyanne.
He's not listening. He's watching TV.
He's so busy.
He hasn't woken up.
He's not up yet.
He had another rough night.
Eating, you know, well done steaks with Heinz ketchup on slathered.
Oh, so 90s with an iceberg lettuce salad.
Uh huh. And a taped Scotch taped tie because he's. You know, classy. I want to hear you guys. Somebody tell me a story. Talk to me. Who wants to talk to me?
I'll go first.
Yeah,
because I know exactly what I'm going to tell you. Because I heard on a recent episode of yours, you talked about ghosts.
Yes.
And how much you love ghosts.
Yeah, I think last week.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I had my first actual contact or encounter with a ghost.
Oh, my
I'm
God.
In my 30s and have never, I mean, I've heard stories that Whoa. I believe, you know,
yeah.
I definitely believe what other people have said, but I have never had this happen to me before. So, like, I'm getting tingly just talking about it because it's like, I just never thought, honestly, it would happen to me. But so I am in Sunday Company at the Growlings
yes.
and like 45 minutes out from a show, we're all, you know, there's that buzz. Everybody's doing work. And somebody is sitting in a chair and I come up behind her to just tell her a little something that I was going to ask her to do.
Someone in the Sunday Company.
Somebody
with
in
you.
Sunday Company. So okay. I'm standing behind her chair and I lean down over into her ear and I'm telling her this thing and I feel a tap on my opposite shoulder. And so I think, you know, we're all buzzing around.
Right.
And I think it's somebody, you know, maybe tapping me to go like, hey, could I borrow this thing? Or, you know, let's run lines. Or so I feel a tap and I turn and I literally say aloud like, yes. And nobody's there. And I find myself, I'm between the chair and an ironing board.
Uh-huh.
There's like no space for anybody to like
right.
reach over.
I know exactly where you are, and it is incredibly awkward for someone to get behind you because you're right by the one dressing room.
Yes,
little cutout
exactly.
area. Right. Yeah.
Right. And
yes.
back behind me further is a hallway that leads out into the alleyway.
Right.
So, you know, with mm-hmm. the buzz of the post-show thing, I'm thinking somebody's messing with me. Somebody's, you know, playing a joke. So I'm like, who tapped me? Who is it that tapped me? And I'm like, somebody's messing with me. Excuse me. I'm going to go and take care of this situation. And I go up the ramp and into the alley. And there's three people standing there, all in the Sunday Company. And they seem as if they've been standing there a while. And I'm like, which one of you tapped me? What are you guys doing? Who's tapping me? And they were like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, how long have you been standing here? They've been standing and talking there for 10 minutes. They said nobody went up that ramp. But when I turned around, I saw a flash of somebody go around the corner. I saw a like middle-aged to older man in a Hawaiian shirt and shorts sneakily scamper off that hallway. And that's
oh
why I went
God.
Up the hallway.
Whoa.
I'm a great storyteller because I miss pieces as I go. Yeah.
No, it's wonderful. I like that you saved it to that. I really
no,
did.
It, and my, you know, it, you know, a-hole in me, I'm just like, could have been a muscle spasm.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
Oh, that's what I'm getting
exactly.
a lot of that.
And then, but no,
that's
no, of
what
course,
people are telling me.
But then,
however,
it felt
no,
like a tap.
No, that's the thing that I will say about when the ghost experience I've had. I'm like, this was not a normal situation. Like, this is a different thing from just like, oh, I felt sometimes like your instinct when people tell stories
yeah.
about like, you know, you feel a tap on your shoulder and you look back and there's a snake there and there's like a weird instinct
yeah.
that takes over.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same. It's like a
no.
thing where you're like, no, there was a.
It felt like I was being pranked.
Right.
It felt like yeah. somebody was trying to like yeah. mess with me, you know, and I mean, it's at the Growlings Theater. So whichever ghost it was.
It sounds like Phil Hartman
not,
to me.
Does it?
Whoa.
It could have been.
I was trying to scramble my head of like who.
Yeah.
Well,
I wonder.
You're not the first person to point that out. And there's lots of theories of who it was. But when I came back, also there's video of me freaking out coming back being like, who tapped me? Somebody has tapped me.
Oh, wow.
Because I turned all tingly and red because that's never happened to me before. But I was certain I felt a tap,
right.
like a real tap. And So it turns out two other people, the gal I was trying to speak to, and somebody sitting in, you know, that group of chairs right there, also saw the same kind of a person go around that corner. So one of them said, oh, it was like a patterned shirt. And, you know, one of them said it was like a guy with dark hair. So we kind of all saw the same person. I will also say that this does not match a description of anyone who was there that night.
Yeah.
Like anyone in the cast, anyone in the crew.
I can't think of anybody in your cast.
Nobody. No.
Wow.
And it hasn't happened to me again since. And I oddly feel like I was freaked out at the time. And the next couple of days, it was all I could think about.
Uh-huh.
And now that it's happened to me, I can't say I don't want it to happen again. I'm gesturing to the greater. I don't want it to happen to me again necessarily, but I feel a sense of sort of like calm.
Yeah,
about
that's
it.
That's how
like
I felt
it kind of gave me a sense of like, huh, okay, now that I've experienced it, first of all, it wasn't as scary as I thought.
It's and not
like
in the moment.
And kind of now, like, I know now. Like, I know that that's real because I experienced it. And it makes me feel, like, it makes me feel weirdly calm.
Yeah, well, and I know a lot of people have, I wish I knew more, like, actual specific stories about ghosts at the Groundlings, but I know that people have felt that energy there before.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, I will say this. I know for a fact. The internet is never worse than in any third world country than it is at the Groundlings Theater. Like it's always dropping signals. There's something energetically that doesn't ever work. And like, you know, when you're trying to find, you know, it's like,
it's
I'm
not
always
flowing there.
The electronics have the hardest time there. Every time I run over there to like print out something cause I'm lazy and I haven't had a working printer. Printers cost, like what, $35 or $40.
I'm not spending it.
I'm not a rich man. I'm not spending that kind of gold.
Then
what am I?
You're still saving that Roger Corman voiceover money.
I mean, and so I'm always like running over to the Groundlings. So like, you know, and they have such an issue with electronic, with any technology there.
They do.
They have always, their system's down. They're not being able to communicate even from one part of the building to another. And I've always kind of joked like it's built on an Indian burial ground because it's like, what happened here?
Yeah.
That it just can't. And I know it's a group of artists that are trying to, that are running up. But
well, no, I mean, they have a staff of well-equipped, experienced people who can are very able to put together that kind of thing.
Been there for 40 years and it's like a thing where you're like, you would think.
Put that together.
But I wonder, I sort of am the thing where I'm like, I wonder if there is some sort of, this is some sort of energy there that is comforting and magical and wonderful that also that, you know, that's that people who, and I know, and in their 40 years, they've, I would say, because, you know, it's a small group of people who have been in the Groundlings relatively, given how many years it is. There haven't been that many people actually died from the ground who have, you know.
I think it's almost just the mischievous nature of comedians and comedic performers. It's like when we get around each other, there's an electricity and like, you know, I mean, I know a guy who worked at Chateau Marmont for like 15 years and the room where John Belushi died. Kids have reported, like he plays with kids, like the kids just be like, oh, the funny man was making me laugh, and not in a scary way.
Right.
And like really young ones.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And they're like, what? Oh, you know? And it's just kind of, you know, he was a kid. John Belushi was a kid.
Yeah,
he
absolutely.
Would, you know, and like, I mean, one of the places I work at is a comedy store, and that's supposedly insane.
Oh,
haunted.
Yeah.
But that's probably because they used to kill people in the basement but before it was a comedy club, and Mickey Cohen owned it. But, different story.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean.
But didn't somebody legendarily jumped off the roof?
Yeah, the hotel next door.
Oh, okay. Someone say, if you jumped off the comedy store,
you would not die.
You'd
like
break a leg.
Maybe. It's not that high.
Embarrassingly injured.
15 feet. Help!
And
the lamest
like,
call for help.
Oh God! Somebody call.
We'll give you the Saturday slot. We'll wheel you on stage.
So yeah, that's
kind of my. Phil Hartman was probably the most fun guy to be around ever.
Yeah,
you know
what everybody said. So and he physically built the theater too. I mean, he was a carpenter.
Wow.
And he paid for his classes by building that stage.
Get out of here!
Yeah, and the theater's named after him. I mean, and he obviously is. You know, was universally loved, and also there's stories of this is super dark, but it's what we do on the show.
He
and his wife like horrible fights in the alley leading up to leading up to the murder and just how it was like, how everybody was, you know, worried for him and just that she was so mentally unstable. And
sure.
You know, yep. So, yeah. You know, wow. And, but, you know, so you just wonder, like, if that is, you know, he goes, it's his happy place.
Sure,
also,
he's having
Lynn
fun.
Stewart always said this, that because she, you know, Lynn Stewart, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. She was best known, she's Charlie's mom and It's Always Sunny, but she's best known as Miss Yvonne from Pee Wee's Playhouse. So yes. She was in the Groundlings originally, and she was with, a bunch of, you know, and I don't mean to misquote her and say that she talked track. She's the sweetest person ever, but she did say that Phil Hartman was the first person to mention the Groundlings on national TV. Like she was the first person to say, I came from the Groundlings. And a lot of other people, you know, that you would find out later, but uh-huh. She was so proud of that theater. And so, you know, so it would make total sense if that's where his energy would go back. And I do believe that people's energy goes somewhere. It has to.
It has to go somewhere. You know, it doesn't just disappear and become nothing.
And I find it kind of beautiful in a way that you kind of go, oh, good. We're not
alone in some way.
Well, and it makes sense that you had the legends of horrifying ghosts and like, you know, gothic environs in 1800s England, because that was a scary place. So you died horribly and didn't have a happy life. And so you're walking around rattling chains and yelling Ebenezer.
Sure.
You know, in the modern age where we have therapy and appreciate comedy and things.
Right.
You know, treat women a little better than then.
Just
you know,
a little maybe bit.
I don't have to.
Just a pinch of salt better.
Treat them.
You don't have to deal with that, Drew.
I don't deal with that.
Yeah. But like.
Exactly. Oh, gay men cannot be misogynist.
No.
Without a question.
Of course.
Yeah. Gay men
free
love.
Pass.
Yeah.
Hated
always.
It.
Oh, my God. Some of the worst women are gay men. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No. But I mean, that's just kind of the ghosts, maybe not necessarily of now, but of kind of our scene would be happier ghosts.
Yeah.
You know?
More, yeah.
You know,
maybe.
Well, and it makes sense. That-
and not, well, I guess what I'm saying, not scary ghosts.
Right.
Yeah.
But I know Sam Pancake. It was said one time that his friend had just an annoying ghost, like in the house.
No.
They were just irritating.
Oh God!
Like
it was just
it
like it just was like rattling. Like, it just sounded like
just
they were
like
in the kitchen.
Spill
cabinets.
A little bit of milk.
Yeah, and just being like, just annoying. Like you could feel like this nagging energy.
What happens
like,
when an annoying person dies?
Right.
Yeah, it's just like
needy,
and just like
pay attention to me.
That's cool. What you're talking about, but this guy was so mean to me at the mall.
Ew,
like, oh, shut up.
So there's like all different.
You don't listen to anyone. You're so negative.
It's all about you, ghost.
I don't want to be like, oh, bring on the scary ghost. At least I'll get like, I can, you know, deal with something.
Oh, keeps knocking over pots and pans because he can't eat anymore. He's jealous.
Uh-huh, I'm just hungry. I want the flavors in my mouth.
Taste.
All of the food ends up in the trash. Like, I just got this.
It's still
I just
all about
got
him.
This.
He's turning the channel.
I love it. Matt Bronger, do you have a story?
It's
a revelation or an
not
observation?
As uplifting or beautiful.
As death and
ghosts.
As ghosts. But I was racking my brain for something I haven't really talked about. I've mentioned this kind of to friends, just that when I lived in Chicago, performing out of I.O. and The Annoyance, and then getting into stand-up.
Oh, I didn't know you were The Annoyance.
Yeah. I studied under Del Close before he died.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And anyway, you know, I was in the quote-unquote industry, meaning like the restaurant industry, like waiting tables. That one. Yes. That's the one I think of. Whenever someone says industry, I'm just like, what do we care? There's waiters in the crowd.
Like, plates.
Oh, right.
You're like, oh, shoes for cruise? Did you ever have shoes for cruise?
Yeah.
Those catalogs.
I never wore them, but yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
But the big thing in Chicago is street fairs. And, you know, because it's only sunny 3 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So street fairs, people block off streets and everyone gets drunk and you listen to bands. And they're all very much similar or the same. They're a lot of fun. But my favorite was always Market Street Days, which is in Boys Town, mm-hmm. which is the gay part of town. Mm-hmm. And my
and
gay
that's
friends.
Like north area?
Yeah, it's basically Lakeview. Halstead. Some of it is on Broadway.
Okay.
And right around where the Laugh Factory is now. They used to be called the Lakeview. But just north or – actually, I'm sorry, just – east of where I.O. is, like Wrigleyville and Wrigley Field.
Okay, great.
And so I'd go every single year because it was the most fun. My gay friends would they put me onto it, and then from then on I would just go.
Right.
And I was kind of thinking about like it was this thing of this unabashed just love of fun, of just getting drunk and hanging out with people that love fun. And part of me was kind of wondering, like, was I just pandering? You know, was I kind of going, because I was going through it, because I would go, my friend Tony Williams, who still is the most handsome man I've ever known, he's an old friend of mine, I would insist he would go with me. So he would go with me, and I remember we walked down the street, and there was this group of gay men, and one looked at him, and like Scarlett O'Hara fainted.
Stop it.
Back of the hand to the forehead, like,
that's a good move.
And fell into his friends, and I was just like, you know, you just made a man faint, right? And he's like, shut up. And
we're
walking, and my friend Christy, who called herself Yummy, that's a long story, with us.
Wow.
And we're going past you know, this club called Sidetracks, which is one of the biggest clubs there. And
definitely a gay bar.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah, for sure. Show Tune Night is a seller. I had friends who bartended there who would make like $500-$600 a night in the 90s. And so
in the 90s.
In the 90s.
Now it's so like we'd 30 go, a night. But.
Yeah, right now.
Changed so much.
Exactly. So there's men out front.
Now it's a Starbucks.
Yeah. There's men out front, shirtless, you know, about 100 of them dancing. And Yummy and I are going through the crowd. And Yummy is literally just rubbing her body against every man, kind of thing, like just come and get through, and with this look of rapture in her face. And I'm just like, you know, she should be here more than me because she's really enjoying this far more than me in a kind of creepy way. But like, but it was great. And I basically, let me see, go through these. I wrote a couple. Okay, did the fainting thing.
The fainting is amazing.
I went and sat at the bar at this place called Roscoe's, which still is one of my favorite bars in Chicago. It's a great old gay bar. Uh-huh. And we struck up a conversation with these guys. And I kind of had this attitude that this guy was just like, so you're straight, right? Like, he called me out right away. I was like, uh-huh. He's like, well, why are you here? And I was like, I just love partying with the gays. Like, I said that. And it feels so pandering.
The guy
was so sweet. He was just like, we do let our hair down, don't we? And I was just like, you do, man. You know, and I'm already half drunk. And then I'm next to this guy who hasn't been privy to the conversation. And he turns to me and he starts talking to me. And he's just like, how long have you been in Chicago and stuff? And he's just like, oh, 4 years. Like, you have a boyfriend? Uh-huh. And I was like, nah. And I didn't even think to go, I'm not gay.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and we're talking
for
a while. And he goes, and he just kind of leans on me and goes, wow, 4 years in Chicago, no boyfriend. What's up with that? And I was like, oh, I have a girlfriend. And just the look on his face of just, fuck you.
He wasted 3 seconds on you.
And you're like, he's absolutely right.
Right.
Like, what am I doing here?
Well, that's better than immediately. I mean, it's always suspect to me when I meet a straight guy and they immediately tell me they have a girlfriend or a wife.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, cool. I wasn't asking.
Totally.
I didn't know, but they have to let you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Just so you know.
Do not hit on me.
And that's someone with that's got issues and of, you know, whether it's, you know, and, but.
Well, and I loved just the kind of the pure joy that you would find at the straight street fairs when, like, you know, the band would launch into, you know, Heart's What About Love or something. Or, you know, something like, oh, remember this when we were kids? Oh, yeah. It's like that all day at Market Street Days.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a guy with a bodybuilder body and a tattoo matching, the same tattoo on both shoulders of a demon kneeling with his wings out and a massive erection. Both shoulders. And that guy's like, hey, you guys need any help? Let me know. Here are some pamphlets. Right to your right to your left. He was like an info, ask me anything guy.
Right.
The boner shoulder guy.
Oh my God. Wow. Boner shoulder.
Boner shoulder.
In case you missed it on the left, it's right there on the right. Do not let anybody miss this tat.
And we had this manager at my restaurant who was gay and we were meeting his boyfriend there. And his manager would routinely get just way too drunk, way too fast, and say stuff that you didn't want to hear. You know, or just like, you know, I have fake teeth so I can take them out. And, Frank.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Thanks, man. Dude. It's 10 a.m.
Disgusting.
And so I finally met his boyfriend. His boyfriend, same thing, just trash.
Wow.
Match made in heaven.
Got in my like face and was like, immediately looked at me like I was like a prize horse. Like, like the whole thing of like taking me in. And he takes his hand and just runs his hand through my hair, like just to touch my hair.
Uh-huh.
So I had like real long, thick, curly hair at the time. Just whoop. Just like checking me out. I'm surprised he didn't ask to see my teeth.
Well, you know. Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, you have to say that, like, on that level, like, everyone's, you know, we're all kind of garbage in that sense.
Yeah. It's we are all, we all have these desires to
right.
take something.
Right. And, like, you know, like, it's just like, first of all, I love it. I mean, I go to Akbar all the time, which is in Silver Lake. It's like my bar, and they don't call themselves a gay bar. They call themselves a neighborhood bar, and there's and especially on the weekends, it's very mixed. And I think that's great about the
I love
that vibe in the place because it's not so. But there are definitely times where it's like, you know, we have an aversion to the giant groups of bachelorette parties that come in and they are basically like, let's go in and just get as drunk as we can. And the gays will love us.
Yeah.
And the gays will be so entertaining for us.
Exactly.
Because that's what they're there for.
And it's the same thing about feeling like you're at the zoo. And you're at the zoo again. It's like, let's go and point at the gays, you know, and then we're going to be safe because none of these guys are going to try to take advantage of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we can just be around hot guys and whatever. And then this sort of idea. And we're like, we're just here to have a drink and catch up and be people together.
Yeah. Right.
And if that's why you're here, absolutely.
Let's
come
enjoy
along.
Each other without taking advantage and without diminishing. Dave Holmes had the best line in his book about that, as the gay best friend is the eunuch. You know?
Yeah.
It's just like you don't, what you care about doesn't matter.
Right. Absolutely.
Because I see it this way.
Right.
You just boys, 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 and that's all you care about. But in the meantime, help me find a dress.
Exactly.
That's your job.
Exactly. And it's a very strange thing where it's like we are sometimes, you know, and first of all, like, you know, hey, it takes a village, hooray for everyone. But I have lots of lady friends, of course. I have so many female friends, but I don't have any, I've never had the fag hag. I've never had the friend who treated me like, come on, let's go shopping, Mary. And, you know, because I don't enjoy that relationship. That's not a friend.
Yeah. Good for you to not fall into that archetype.
I'm not
a puppy. If I was a gay man, it would be very easy to fall in that just to feel needed.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Sure. And then I know a lot of people that really do. And it can become very codependent because it is very much like, let's hide our need for true connection to someone vulnerability.
Stay
in this very safe because we're never going to try to hook up. We're always going to be able to do things. You know, we can get together. We can, you know, do whatever we want together, and no one's going to judge us. And that's great.
Yeah. If that's legit and real, that's great.
But it is very strange when I've had women try to do that to me, or when, you know, or like you're saying, like, you shouldn't feel weird, like going like, or pandering because you want to go to a gay bar because it's fun. It's like the same. It's like, I wouldn't say like, if I wanted to go and worship at like an AME Zion church because it was where I was spiritually fulfilled, then great. That's different than going, you know what would be fun?
Let's go to that.
Black church. You know?
That's so true.
You know,
they get
it's the
into
difference.
It.
Totally. It's like what it's like it's authenticity,
Let's go
I think.
See
a really good
that.
Analogy.
And it's like, you know, so why would you so it's like a thing where you're like, I think you know, I've never, I don't hang out with gays that would like turn around and go, oh, there's straight people over there. Disgusting. Let's go, you know, let's go hate on them.
Those are the only kind of gays I hate.
You know, I know that. You and your mean gays, Leslie.
They're so fun.
But no, it's like, and it's a thing too where, you know, I love that now, like, we're slowly evolving towards a place where, you know, straight people can go into a predominantly gay space and still be straight and no one's questioning and they're not questioning themselves and they're not worried that anybody would think. It's like, we can tell. It's like, I can tell you're straight. I can tell you're gay. I can tell whoever, you know, and then there are people we're not sure about and they might not be sure about themselves. And that's a totally different thing.
Sure.
But it's nice that, like, you know, straight guys could go into a gay bar and not feel like, well, if I go in there, people will think I'm gay, which is like,
yeah.
Which is so like most people
and
it's like
who gives a living crap?
Nobody cares.
You can just tell someone you're not and they're not going to get mad, generally speaking. I understand that guy getting mad because we talked for a little while.
He wasted time. Well, he's on the hunt.
You know what I'm saying? I get it. I get it. I had the same mentality at the time, you know?
Right.
It's just, the thing I can give you like a microcosmic moment of what annoys me about my types. Well, not my types, but straight men.
Your people.
Why it's wrong. Yeah, my people, sometimes sadly, is there's a great
oppressors,
bar.
I call you. Oppressors.
We are the oppressors. let's not get it twisted. It's true. There's a great bar in New Orleans. I think it's called Applejack's. That's that's in the east side of the French Quarter, which is the gay quarter, gay part of the quarter. So I had this great night where I was in a festival and I'd done my show. So I got myself a drink and just walked the streets and just hit some places. And I went in there to have a beer. And there's a drag show going on with like lip syncing and stuff. And I was like, oh, fantastic! There's Cher. There's Jody Watley. Let's do it. So I'm there.
The two greats.
Yeah, the two greats. And so I'm sitting there. And there's a glut of tourists that are in there, and they're exactly there for the reason, like the bachelorette party that you were talking about. And Jody Watley's rocking Don't You Want Me, you know, mm-hmm. to the crowd. And kind of starts coming into the crowd and like just kind of doing the thing where you put your hand on someone's shoulder and sing to them for a second and then you do a spin and go somewhere else. Right. You know, like a cabaret singer.
Like a drag show.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And she puts her hand on this guy's shoulder and the guy's like shakes it off and is like, looks at his friends and does the shake like a bug touched me.
Yeah. Stop it, like, sir. Get
fuck
out
you,
of
man.
It.
Get out of here.
Both ways. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
It's a Jackie Beat said, for, you know, after the election, uh-huh. she would go on tour and she would ask, she's like, who voted for Trump? And you know, and she's like, no, seriously, who voted for Trump? And she's like, if you did, you have to get out. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah,
you can't,
oh you're my voting, God. Good for her,
you're voting
man.
Against my human rights. You mm-hmm. can't come here to just laugh at the clown and say, look at this, and then look how disgusting
oh,
they
man.
Are.
Right.
You have to embrace me and support me and see me as a human being. Mm-hmm. And then I'm working on a deeper level here than just coming out and painting my face to be like a freak for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It's like that is the thing where it's like, you know, you know, check your context of why you're coming to this thing. If you want to love and, you know, and you're coming at a show with, you know, love and support, then go and do it. But if you're there to gawk and mock.
And then suddenly not want to participate.
Yeah.
Right.
And then
exactly.
suddenly not
oh,
be
it touched
okay
me.
With
ooh,
right.
That thing
it
touched me.
Yeah. Exactly. I'll look at it from 10 feet away, but please don't. It's like,
the worst.
Sir, no.
No. Mm-hmm. No. No. No, you deserve, you know, to just stare at a bag of Doritos.
Right.
And, you know.
Go home
and
watch football. And
yeah, exactly.
Eat some Fritos.
No art
Frito
for
pie.
You.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, I'm getting kicked out of this lounge,
you're
this gorgeous
me.
Lounge. Yes.
It feels like we just got here.
I know.
You
I know.
Drink
so we
one.
Have to wrap this up. I know, exactly. We're going to start pounding.
Yeah,
liquor.
Now we're going to go to the bar
and doing
pounding.
Coke all over the table.
The next edition of this, promise me you're going to make it like Hollywood Squares. And everyone gets like three cocktails.
Oh, my God. I love
it's
it.
Like,
it's
like 1980s Hollywood
smoking
Squares.
And making really smoking. Sexually inappropriate comments
yes.
towards each other and yeah. in really weird hair pieces.
And you should write, you should get actual Paul Lynde's one liners. And trade them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you get this one, you get this one.
Exactly.
Great.
Somebody has to shut that baby up. I'm gonna fuck it.
Oh my God, on the plane.
On the plane.
He was
real
on the plane
story.
And the baby would stop screaming and he was drunk. Somebody has to shut that baby up and go back there and fuck it.
Oh my God.
Paul yes. Lynde.
Talk about a tortured homosexual and an American legend.
Yes.
Paul Lynde.
And an icon. Yeah.
And
all
an icon.
Look up to.
Usually it was like in the game of, Paul, in the game of billiards, how many men are, I fucked up the joke. How many balls are on the table? Depends on how many men are playing.
No, that
was always innuendo.
See, always innuendo.
What else is there?
With like a knowing look.
Right.
And he was just like sweating and crying inside. I love him. I love him dearly. Yeah. Love you, Paul. Thank you guys so much. I want to thank Leslie Ann Huff and Matt Bronger.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
This
so
has
fun.
Been another episode so of True Jogi's Minor Revelations. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.